Right back at it on The Fan in New York, inside the 8 p.m. hour. And another special guest. Good job, Paulie. Joining us right now, John Morosi from MLB Network. John Morosi is dropping a new book called Road to Cooperstown, or excuse me, a podcast called Road to Cooperstown tomorrow. And he's able to join us. And I'm like, hey, send him. What's up, John?
Keith, how are you, my friend? I'm doing well. I'm actually, ironically enough, while tomorrow's podcast is entitled The Road to Cooperstown, I am on the road home from Cooperstown as we speak. After a great weekend there in upstate New York, what a great class, great speeches yesterday. And I suppose now for the next week or so, Keith, it's all about the trade deadline as we have this nice pivot point from the past to the future.
Oh, yeah. It's always great. I don't know. As a kid, I always watched the ceremony, always appreciated it. I know people are critical of the Hall of Fame and who gets in or who doesn't. But, yeah, since I have you on, what did you enjoy most? Jim Leland, Adrian Beltre, Maurer, whose speech did you enjoy most, and what did you enjoy most about the weekend?
Well, Keith, I think every speech was excellent. And I love that all four of them spoke to gratitude, which I think is a really important emotion for all of us in 2024, when you can have gratitude to share that and put that out there. And I think it was just really cool to hear each individual experience. You've got Adrian Beltre, who's born and raised in the Dominican Republic. He makes it to the major leagues at the age of 19 with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And, of course, Jim Leland, who signs his first pro contract out of Perrysburg, Ohio, back in 1963. And now 61 years later, in the year in which he's turning 80, he makes it to the Hall. That's a pretty different life experience and journey, Keith. And I just love that the Hall of Fame unifies all of these great and different baseball stories. I think, and the way that Jim closed his speech yesterday, talking about getting your first autograph and going up to your parents and sharing that with them.
Awesome.
And the joy that you have of being at the ballpark. I think we had four deserving candidates, and I hope, Keith, next year, hope CeCe's first ballot. He belongs. He deserves it. And what a great celebration it would be if we have both CeCe Sabathia and Ichiro Suzuki going in on the first ballot 1 year from right now.
Yes, sir. Hey, shout out to Todd Helton as well. I didn't mean to snub him. I love his story, being a high school quarterback. And I didn't mean to leave him out of the group. But you mentioned CeCe, and I've never been up to Cooperstown. I think I got to make the trip to see
Bob,
too. Yeah, I think I got to do that.
I think 1 year from now. But I would say this to everybody who wants to go up there, and I love Cooperstown. I even love going up there in January when we do the shows around the reveal of the next ballot. I would say to make those reservations now, because the combination of Yankee fans, Mariner fans, and all the fans from Japan who want to come over and be there as the first ever Japanese-born Hall of Famer is inducted. Keith, I would say you might be staying at the WFAN studios and commuting up based on where all the hotels might be at that point in time.
Yeah, I got to find somebody up there that I could crash with. I know it's not enough room for everybody, but that's also what makes it special, right? Everybody can go.
Right, and I think part of the difficulty in going there is part of the charm of the place. When you get there, you realize it's not that easy to travel there. Certainly, it's not easy at all to be part of the 1% of the players in the history of the game who have ever been elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. But it's the journey itself that's special. It's a one-stoplight town, Keith. A one-stoplight town that welcomes the entire baseball world. And how they do it every year is extraordinary. It's a beautiful hotel there on Otsego Lake. It's a time and a place that you are there, and I felt this over the weekend. I shared this with somebody. Being there and covering induction weekend is almost like getting to officiate weddings every day of your life, because you're effectively, not that I know what that's like, but you're effectively around people on the happiest day of their lives all the time, and that's what Cooperstown means.
Awesome, John. Hey, again, thanks for joining us tonight. I really want to talk to you about the trade deadline, as I was just kind of going off about how if I'm the Yankees, I'm not getting rid of Spencer Jones. I'm not getting rid of Jason Dominguez. Those are their top two prospects. And in the outfield right now, I mean, they've got to run Trent Grisham out there. Alex Verdugo is good as gone. And it's not a guarantee, even though it should be a guarantee, that Juan Soto is back next year. Do you think the Yankees move on from one of those two guys in pursuit of anyone, from Mason Miller to now people are talking about Tarik Skubal? There's a bunch of guys out there. Do you think that they move off their top prospects?
Not unless they get back a controllable outfielder. And so, for example, and then I do not expect this to happen. I don't believe that he would be available in a deal like this. But take a look at Brenton Doyle of the Colorado Rockies. Not a big name. He won a Gold Glove last year. He's one of the best defensive outfielders in the major leagues right now, and he's becoming a more impressive defender. I would also say a more impressive offensive player. I would also look at Colorado and someone like a Ryan McMahon, who I think would maybe help address some of the Yankees' deficiencies on the infield. For me, the Yankees, I realize that there are some pitching arms out there that Yankee fans want. Miller certainly fits that description. So does Skubal. I don't think the Yankees can dedicate resources on the level of a Dominguez or a Jones to address pitching in that form. I think you have to maybe use some other assets to upgrade your pitching. And if you're going to move Jones or Dominguez, it has to be guys who are controllable, like a Brenton Doyle would be, or like a Ryan McMahon would be, and would meaningfully upgrade your lineup. Because when I look at this team right now, Keith, they're heavily dependent, and certainly today was good to see with their offense, but they're so heavily dependent on two players that when you go into the postseason, if you are facing quality pitching every night, they will eventually be able to pitch around one and force the other one to beat them. And it's hard to have two sluggers going at the same time over a long postseason run because of the quality of pitching that you face. You need 4 and 5 and 6 threats up and down your lineup to where you really pose a struggle and a difficulty for an opposing pitching staff. So if I'm the Yankees right now, yes, I upgrade my pitching, but I would look more at guys like a Nick Martinez or a Frankie Montas with Cincinnati. The Nationals still have some guys to move. Don't give up your A-level guys for pitching, because if you get the right smart bullpen additions to form a better bridge to Holmes, you can do that without giving up your very best prospects.
It's funny you mention a bridge to Holmes, because I'm looking for a closer. I'm looking for a different guy to get those last three outs, if possible, at the deadline.
Yeah, I know, and I think that the Tigers certainly could fit, too, into that equation. Jason Foley's a Northeast guy. I think he would be a really good fit with the Yankees as well. But you're right. I mean, the bullpen right now is in a bit of a crisis mode. And I do think that you would get a better version of Holmes if you had a better bridge to Holmes, or maybe someone who at times could alleviate the burden of being the closer, if that makes sense. There are enough teams out there, in my mind, Keith, who are, whether it's the Jays, and certainly their closer's injured right now, but there are enough teams out there that are willing to engage on relievers that I think that if you bring in, I would ideally say, two relievers, and then distribute the workload a little more evenly, that you'll get a better version of Holmes down the stretch.
We're on the phone right now with my guy, John Morosi from MLB Network. His podcast, Road to Cooperstown, comes out tomorrow, and he's on his way back from Cooperstown right now. Let's talk a little bit about the Mets. I'm watching the Mets right now, and funny enough, Paul just said to me as we watch Josh Bell go deep, like, Josh Bell would be a great fit for the Yankees. I don't know how much they're looking at first base as a whole, but I know the Mets are looking for bullpen help. I know they've already made a move to bring Phil Maton here. What do you think they do? Because they're obviously in this in-between period where, one, we don't know how good this team is. They're a wild card team. They're a couple games above 500 this year. Two, this was supposed to be a season where they really, you know, just bring David Stearns in with eyes on the future, so they're not going to want to give up their top prospects. But you got to give to get. And I think that this team has shown that they can hit enough where if the bullpen shapes up, then they're definitely going to be able to make a charge towards October.
Yes, Keith. I think that this is the kind of a year where I would expect it's going to be a continuation on the theme that we saw from the Mets during the offseason. You go to the trade they made with the Brewers. You mentioned the Maton trade. Those types of incremental moves, I think, are what David Stearns will look to do here. This is not a year to sacrifice your prospects to go all in. This is, to your point, you described it perfectly, Keith. It's a building year. It's year one for David Stearns. I think that if you were to have asked the Mets front office in Port St. Lucie on day one to ask them what their winning percentage would be as you approach the trade deadline, they might have given you a number that's below 500. In fact, they're above 500 right now. And I think whether it's a Tanner Scott, I mentioned some of the Reds relievers, the Cubs, my goodness, they're probably going to be sellers now as well. There are enough teams out there that are likely moving some relievers, maybe even the Giants who are still under 500. You can pick up a reliever, and whatever prices you're being quoted right now on relief pitching, they're going to drop in the next week, because relievers, if you've got a reliever on an expiring contract and you give up the, and you're a selling GM of the Marlins or the Cubs or the Reds, the Rockies, the Giants, the A's, not maybe Mason Miller, but a lot of these teams, you're not going to pass up too many opportunities to unload an expiring reliever and get some value back. So the market will come back to the Mets in that regard. Maybe you even get a guy that's kind of a swing man like a Nick Martinez who can start games for you if needed. And then you ride it out with this group, because I would say this to Mets fans. 2 months ago, when the Mets were really struggling and we were talking about, hey, Pete Alonso might get traded to Seattle at the deadline, well, that's not going to happen anymore. They're playing too well. Mm-hmm. And I think that in a certain way, Keith, I would say to a Mets fan that just holding for the most part and then incrementally adding some bullpen is a huge win right now. It is a huge win. I think if they're going to make a run in the postseason, it's going to be because Iglesias keeps playing like he's playing kind of out of his mind right now, and Vientos keeps emerging, and Lindor keeps looking more like the guy that you signed, and J.D. Martinez keeps giving you solid DH work and really elevates the lineup in terms of the smarts of his hitting approach. That's how you get to the playoffs if you're the Mets. And it's kind of a charming, nice underdog story that I don't think is going to be disrupted by a dramatic trade for a Garrett Crochet or a Tarek Skubal. That's not where the Mets are right now. And right. Guess what? That's okay. I'm okay with that if I'm the Mets.
You read my mind with my next question. I was going to ask about Pete Alonso, because in this last week since the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game, I've taken so many calls on, I'm done with Pete. He's underperforming. They need to trade Pete. We need to get something back for Pete. And I've been on the side of, they're not trading Pete Alonso. They're not going to trade their cleanup hitter, or they're not going to trade a guy who's been the face of the franchise, who's represented them at so many All-Star games. They're not going to shake up this clubhouse to get prospects. Like, it's just not realistic to me. But let's talk about, you already said you don't think they're going to trade Pete, but is there anybody else on the Mets, like a Luis Severino's name has been floated, J.D. Martinez? I know there's a ton of people that would love to see Jeff McNeil sent somewhere, but it seems like in the second half so far, Jeff McNeil's like, I'm not going anywhere, and I don't think he goes anywhere with that contract. Starling Marte, anyone else from the Mets that you think could potentially get moved? Quintana, Minaya.
Right. I think that you're hitting on the right names with the pitching. And just given the amount of teams that need pitching right now, let's say the Dodgers called them up and said, listen, we've got a bit of a pitching crisis here. Could we have Severino or Minaya or Quintana? We'll give you a younger starter, maybe even two guys that are AAA level or about, or maybe they're already establishing themselves, but they're not quite ready to pitch in the playoffs with the Dodgers. Like a Landon Knack, for example, someone of that type. If there's a Landon Knack for Severino deal, again, I don't think the Dodgers would do that, but they might, because they're just their panic level right now with their starting pitching. That's the kind of thing that I could see the Mets entertaining. But I don't think that you trade Alonso in any circumstance. I think McNeil's contract is too big. By the way, he's got 3 RBI tonight. So I think JD has really helped them be competitive. And that's where it's interesting. David Stearns, if he were the GM of the Milwaukee Brewers with this team in this situation, he might move somebody. In fact, he did that when he traded Josh Hader. But David Stearns, who grew up in Queens, is no longer the GM of the Milwaukee Brewers. He knows the Mets. He has grown up with the Mets. He understands that when you're a New York team and you're 2 games over and you're in a playoff spot and it's the last week of July, you don't sell. And so even though some of his instincts might say to sell based on where the Brewers were, it's a different world in New York City.
Okay, last thing before we hit 20 minutes. I did a stream earlier on Bleacher Report on the app today about Tarek Skubal. I'm nowhere near as popular as John Heyman on there, but I try. I do my thing, and I used your tweet from this morning at 8:20 talking about, a lot of people were saying that they're not going to move him, but you said consider the following. The Tigers have had a scout watching the Orioles AAA Norfolk affiliate. Now, this is something that I think Yankee fans should pay attention to, because the Orioles were able to trade for Corbin Burns. If they're able to trade for Tarek Skubal, then they get like the 2 best pitchers in the American League.
Yeah.
And I think that could be enough to put them over with the young talent that they have in the lineup. I am on the side of the Tigers are not going to move him. Maybe they move Jack Flaherty. But what do you think about the Orioles going out there to get Skubal? Everybody, the Dodgers need help. The Braves need help. I think the Astros are probably checking in when you look at how decimated their rotations have been with injuries. But, I mean, I'd rather him go anywhere else but Baltimore.
Well, I've got some maybe dispiriting news for you, Keith, from that perspective, which is that I think that if any team has a chance to get him, it is Baltimore, and it would have to be a dramatic offer. And we're talking, and by dramatic, I'm saying Jackson Holliday, Colby Mayo, Samuel Basayo, some level, and probably two of those three at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be something big. But you know what, Keith? When you're talking about prospects, you can't play everybody. And the Orioles have drafted so well. They've got so many guys already in the big leagues. Even Stowers, who's played really well for them in the outfield, keeps getting sent back down to Norfolk because they got no room for him.
Right.
And so if with new ownership especially,
yep.
And unlike Burns, Skubal is under control beyond this year for two more years after this. I think it's a move that would hurt both sides, but help both sides. And when you talk about trades like that, it would be a blockbuster of blockbusters. I still think it's less than 50-50 that it would actually happen, but I think if Skubal goes anywhere, the team with the best chance to get him is Baltimore, and it is going to be fascinating to see if under new ownership they make that bold offer of all those prospects that I think would be required to get this done.
I think they will. You mentioned the new ownership. They lost Tyler Wells, John Means, Kyle Bradish. Like, they won 101 games last year. They're used to losing 100 games. That's how they got all these top draft picks. I'm a little bit afraid. It scares me that they might give the Tigers an offer that's too good to refuse. And next thing you know, they have two aces taking the ball in game one and game two for them in October.
It'd be quite a story, Keith. And that's why we love the trade deadline so much. I often say, at times like this are windows to the soul of your organization. What are your priorities? How much money can you add? How many prospects will you give up? Are you going all in for this year? That's why the next week is one of my favorite weeks, my friend, of the entire baseball calendar.
Hey, well, you're one of the best. You're the man, John. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'll let you get back to it.
Hey, thanks, Keith. I appreciate it. Enjoy the deadline, and thanks for the call tonight. Really appreciate it.
Once again, that's John Morosi from MLB Network over there in Secaucus. He's dropping a new podcast called Road to Cooperstown. Check it out tomorrow.